Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steven and I are together in the Cleveland studio on a dreary day where I'm about to return to Baltimore for hopefully the last week. Too much information, too fucking bad. Steve, how you doing?
Good, good, good.
Was that the right way to start off the tenor of the show?
Probably not.
That's nothing new. Jumping in, so Donald Trump's hush money trial is in jury selection. The actual trial could start, I think, as soon as this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been in multiple courtrooms multiple times. I was a juror once. The jury selection process is exhaustingly boring. Oh my God. And in this case, it's probably actually not, because you're dealing with Trump and, like, what do you think about this guy? No one's going to say never heard of him.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess our perspectives on jury selection are vastly different. Because okay. This is probably one of the most critical aspects of the case, whether you're prosecution or defense, because these are the people who, this is the audience that you're speaking to. These are the people who are going to be making the decision either for or against your client or for or against the state. So if you're the one that's doing the jury selection and selecting,
you know, fair,
you know, this is not boring at all. Even though you may be asking a lot of the same questions, you're getting different answers and you're having to process very quickly if this is a person that you want or if this is a person that you want out.
You know, I'm glad I said what I said, because this is actually really interesting to me, because I'm sitting there as juror number one. And person by person by person, I think there were like 17 of us total, and like 12 and two alternates. And by the end of it, I was just like, can I just go be somewhere else now? And I'm sure now I'm putting myself in the perspective of attorneys. You have, not only are you managing who's on there, but there's limits to who you can just say, I want this person gone without challenge. What do they call that?
Yeah, I mean, there's only, right. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into it in terms of, you know, how you make the selections and the choices that you make. But you only get so much time to really kind of see that strategy out, right? Because you don't know your jury pool beforehand.
Things are happening in real time.
Right. So you know what I mean? Like you're having to make these very critical decisions by, you know, looking at it, seeing a person for the first time, trying to read their body language, trying to make sense of the way they're articulating things, listening to the tone and inflection in their voice. It's a lot. And now, I will say it's exhausting. You know, okay. I mean, like, it gasses you before you even get into, you know, the meat of the trial. But it's just such a critical point that, you know, even when it's over, even if it takes a long time, when it's over, you still don't feel like you had enough time.
You know, again, interesting. In my experience, it was like, I'm one of however many people. I don't want to be here. I honestly didn't expect to be kept as a juror. I ended up being the fucking jury foreman. We talked about it years ago when it happened in real time. So
that's, you know, that's sort of the interesting thing, right? Like, most jurors do come in a very singular mindset, right? Siloed, singular. It's me. This is my time. I'm missing work. I'm not getting paid. How long is this going to take? I want to get back, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's understandable. But, you know, whether you're a plaintiff or a defendant or what have you, you know, you take a very much different view, right? Like, you have to see the entire picture, the big picture. You have to see the forest through the trees, and it's a different vantage point, which is what makes it difficult, right? Because you as a jury are answering questions based off of just your kind of lived experience, right?
Sure.
And I'm trying to process how you are going to interact with other jurors. I'm trying to process how you know, how do you play into this whole big thing that is this case that my client is involved in, or, you know, this case that the state is bringing against this person, right? Like, can you ultimately help me get this win? Are you a piece of that puzzle, or are you not, and do I need to get rid of you?
Well, I think they're down to
alternates.
They got that far. I left Maryland like 1 o'clock on Friday. All right, so trial starts. I don't see anything coming of this. Do you? I do not see him going to jail over this.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I suspect that you likely end up with a hung jury.
I agree. You can't get 12 Americans in a room and get them all to agree one way or another on this issue. There are people who will just say, he's guilty, fuck Trump. And there's people who will be like, you know, he's the next coming, so we must protect him.
And I don't know, I mean, you know, when you lay the evidence all out there, I just don't know if you have enough to connect the dots to really make it stick as the law states. So I think you end up with a hung jury. And that's, you know, kind of the best case scenario for Trump, because he can continue to play the victim. But then, you know, the victim that's now come out victorious, and he's going to ride that wave, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree with your prediction. And like I said, you put 12 random people in this country together and try to not find one that is so staunchly on one side or the other, even if that's the whole point of the voir dire process that we just talked about. I'm sure it's tough to do. I should have written down the guy's name, but a man from Florida lit himself on fire in a public park outside of the Manhattan courthouse, ultimately dying from his self-inflicted injuries. We've bantered about cult. What do you really call it? Is cult a big enough word? Is cult the right word? Dudes lighting themselves on fire to support their glorious leader.
Well, hold on, pause. Before you go any further, this guy wasn't a Trump supporter.
Throwing around pamphlets.
So, but I don't know. He had issues.
Clearly. Lighting self but, on fire.
You know, his manifesto was pretty kind of crazy talkish. Something about, I think, Peter Thiel and bank run and cryptocurrency and plot by the government, all presidents, Trump, Biden, Clinton, including Hillary Clinton, Obama, the Bushes, everybody is in on this giant conspiracy, the whole New World Order thing.
Okay, but that's Trumpy stuff.
Dude, that's crazy stuff. Well, stop. Stop.
I will stop pairing Trump.
Don't
to this.
Just because it's crazy doesn't mean it's Trump. Although if it's Trump, it's crazy, right? But I mean, in this particular instance,
all bourbons are whiskeys. Not all whiskeys are bourbons.
Yes, like in this particular instance, let's be fair. Right, the guy was just a nut job. You know,
his proximity happened to be.
He got pictures. Well, I'm trying to, because you were taking us down the way wrong road. He's got pictures with like Clinton and Newt Gingrich and somebody else.
Like
but
photo
like,
ops.
Are, yeah, like oh, okay. arm around okay, him, okay. but okay. like wearing a Bernie shirt. Okay. So like I don't know what the guy I don't his political leanings seem like they are probably more far left than far right. And his rantings about cryptocurrency, New World Order, dark takeover stuff, I because he said Trump was in on whatever it is, along with Biden and everybody else. So I think the dude was just fucking crazy.
I'm going to bring up Chris Rock then. Whatever happened to crazy? We just put crazy on a little ass bus. All right, dude, just crazy. It's wrong of me to put him as a Trump.
And did you, like, so Elon Musk.
No, I didn't.
X his Twitter platform or whatever. They let videos go for a while of the entire incident.
Oh, no.
Guy poured gasoline all over himself. Like, I watched it because I was like, well, this is not going to be the whole thing. And sure enough, he walked calmly into this sort of non...
It was like a city park almost.
Yeah, it was a park, but it was like kind of like right in front of where Trump's trial is. But they had an area that was like roped off. And he walked into the roped off area, covered himself in gasoline out of a can. Or not gasoline, lighter fluid.
Okay.
And he said something that you couldn't hear in the cell phone video. And then lit a match or a lighter and went up in a giant ball of flames. Like, giant. Like, it looked awful. And then he fell to the ground, like, kind of in a sitting position. And then he, like, passed out. And it took it was minutes before anybody was able to get on top of him with a blanket or a jacket to put him out. It just looked
so
awful.
You see a person on fire for minutes.
Yes.
Yikes. Okay. And I didn't see any of the video. Honestly, when I saw the story.
There were also pictures of him after as they were getting him on into the ambulance.
On a stretcher or whatever.
That were horrific. The fact that he lived as long as he did after that, I know that, like, and I said this on Twitter and I meant it, even though I know that it wasn't an option. But when the cops got to him, one of them should have shot him. I'm not saying that to be funny, and I know that you can't do it. But I would
put him out of his misery.
You have to put a human out of their misery. I don't care if they're crazy. I don't care if you disagree with them politically. I don't care if that was his own choice to die that way. He is dying that way, but you can't let that entire process play out. Just the pain and the agony, to me, is inhumane. Like, and I would argue that in court all day. If I show up to the scene and you're on fire like that, I'm going to shoot you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Dr. Kevorkian has joined the show tonight. All right. So this is going in bad directions in a hurry. Only substances that are legal in the state of Ohio have been consumed today by one or both of us. All right. Anyway.
Oh, my God. So loud.
Yeah, that was kind of spikish. Mike Johnson basically said, I'm going to do my job and put stuff in front of the House for a vote, and mostly revolving around Ukraine, Israel, Gaza funding, and he might lose his speakership because of it. Or he might have his speakership challenged because of it.
Yep.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene is at the forefront of this because she's Trump, you know, surrogate number
one.
She's
an idiot.
And she's an idiot.
Because she's an idiot. Start there.
You know, but does it start there?
No. Her, yes, absolutely. Starting point is her being an idiot, which is what allows for Trump and everything, the rest of this.
I was like, all right, I agree. I mean, I'm not going to defend Marjorie Taylor Greene on anything, but we've talked about this, you know, over the course of years. There's people who say crazy, dumb shit, and they know it's bullshit. Rush Limbaugh knows he's full of shit. Knew he was full of shit.
Lindsey Graham.
Well,
he may be the king of it.
Right. Well, he said literally X and Y, and then said, I never said X, I never said Y. I'm like, yes.
Karl Rove
knew. Agreed. Yeah. And then there's people who genuinely believe really, really dumb shit. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is in the second camp. She believes what she believes. She's a fucking moron. And a complete hypocrite, but I don't think she's delusional. I don't say that right. I don't think she's being deceptive. She's just stupid.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea to try to get into the head or explain stupid, right? Because I don't, you know, like her rationale and hypocrisy on this, right? By continuing to help Ukraine fight, you're just basically signing off on their death, right? Because Russia ultimately is going to beat them. So Ukraine shouldn't continue to fight. They should just give up and let Russia do whatever it is they want to do and basically concede. Now, that's what she's saying. That's literally her argument, right? Now, but so if that's the case and it's just like, all right, so you're saying that if you feel like what are we supposed to do then, right? Like then what? Why is she such a Second Amendment proponent?
Right.
You know, so you can defend yourself, so you can fight, right? Like she wants to the South to secede from the North because of the red states and the blue states.
Right,
state.
She deserves a national right. divorce or whatever she calls
right.
it.
Right, instead of a national divorce, you should just secede, or you should just,
you know. Steer her go, no good
Yeah,
point.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you should just give up, right? Like, and cede to the fact that, like, it just, I don't know, she's an idiot. Right, and when you try to explain idiots, you just basically end up looking like an idiot yourself, you know. And this also showed her, right? Like she's upset because she didn't have the influence that she thought she had, right? She had this false sense of security because she helped lead the charge to get Kevin McCarthy booted, right? Her and Matt Gaetz, and so after that, they're like, all right, well now we have our way, now we have control. Now they see that if they fuck with a blah, 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 Mike Johnson didn't care. He took the risk. Now, so we'll see if they actually challenge to vacate. And then if it's successful, right? Because if it's not, right, if they can't get it in front of the floor, or it just is voted down, then she's gonna be completely castrated at that point.
You know, it's gonna be funny because a few Republican members of Congress have said they just want him to resign. So therefore, we don't have to go through this process. And he's flat out said, no, I'm not doing that.
Why would he?
Exactly, why would he? And here's almost a little egg on my face, because when Mike Johnson got put into place, I was like, holy shit, this is worse than Jim Jordan. This guy is a far right-wing zealot. You know, he's a disaster. And I still believe those things. At the same time, he's standing on principle here and saying, "I'm going to do the right thing, and I'm not going to be."
Yeah, this is an interesting move, and I you know,
I'm saying I respect it.
I mean, he's now. You said it earlier when you said he did his job, right? So I don't know if I'm going to go crazy patting his back because he did his job. Now you can look at it and say, given the circumstances, considering how low the bar has now been set by the Republican Party and the GOP, especially in the House, you're not wrong. But at the same time, I'm still not going to go crazy to give the guy a ton of credit here. It was the right thing to do. But we also now, let's see what else he does or if he does anything right. else. Right.
I think we're on the same side of the issue. It's just a matter of where we stand next to the bar of normalcy, because yeah. the bar of normalcy has
and
been.
And look, this is critical, right? Because Ukraine, look, whatever the argument is for allowing Russia to overrun Ukraine and stop funding them, I don't think is made in good faith, right? You know, because if you're arguing that, then that means that you're saying that you trust Vladimir Putin, and that you believe that this is just a one-off sort of scenario, right? And
right.
you have, you know what I mean? Like he's not going to go into some of the Baltic countries. Poland. He's not going to go into Poland, right? Like, then you're telling me that you believe that, and I can't, given, like, you can't trust this guy. He's got a history of not being trustworthy.
Just because he murders his political
right?
opponents.
I mean, he literally, and it's not, the fact that he murders his political opponents is not something that people are just kind of willy-nilly pulling out of the, and there's nobody that's even denying that. He barely denies it. So this is not the guy that I think
Was it Levchenko? Who was the spy that he murdered with the poison tea? And that was like a, oh, I didn't do exactly this. I did, you know, something, whatever. But there have been like 20 people that have gone through windows in Moscow.
I remember we were doing the show, I don't know, probably about 6-7 years ago. And there was about a good, I don't know, 2-month period where like four people, it was like every other week, somebody like fell out of a window, you know, fell off a balcony, right, accidentally, and they were all like either oligarchs or you know, not even political rivals, just political associates of Putin.
Now, I don't want to be an asshole. Well, I'm going to be an asshole. Before you got sober, you said how much you would love to party with Vladimir Putin.
I said,
with bears on look, chains and shit.
Look, I did. And that all changed. I think I even acknowledged on the show when that all changed, when he invaded Ukraine.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yes, okay, yes. Like, so, I mean, like, look, my willingness and hypocrisy can only go so far, right? Once you start invading sovereign countries.
I'm not suggesting you were made a Putin fan. I'm saying, I remember you were saying how much fun you and Vlad would have. I guess you've been sober for 5+ years now.
Yeah.
So,
I don't.
I'm just listen. Videos of shit that happens in Russia. Like,
look, I don't think that partying with Vlad, you know, is a good idea by any stretch of the imagination.
I believe we discussed that,
and it definitely has its drawbacks, like death by a horrible death through, you know,
poisoning or window defenestration. I believe is the German term for it. one thing I've been wanting to say for weeks and I keep tripping over myself is when we talk about the money going to Israel, Gaza, Ukraine, we talk about it like it's a fucking suitcase full of dollar bills. And it is not. A lot of that money is weapons made by Americans. So it's paying bills internally.
What point are you trying
My
to
point
make
is that people say, like, oh, we're just throwing this money away. Well, actually, it's going to companies in America, companies I might not feel great about lauding. At the same time, I've worked in pharma my career. I actually ran into a guy at my hotel bar in Baltimore, and he was talking about how his company is an energy company, and they do fracking. And I took a couple jabs at him and then said, you know, I'm fucking with you because I work in pharma. And he replied, have you seen the movie the series Dope Sick? Which I have not, but apparently it's very good. In any event, dude, it's all dirty. Yes.
Engineer nerd talk.
Yes, absolutely.
Terrible.
I think this is pure entertainment, if you don't mind.
Anyway, so here's the deal. Yes, you're right. That money does end up kind of cycling back through. That's just a messy situation altogether, right?
Sure.
But you can't, I don't know if trying to justify it by saying the money still cycles back through U.S. companies and those U.S. companies are like pretty notorious because of what they do and what they make and what's going over there. I don't know if that's the best argument. You know, but I see. I mean, I get what your point. I mean, if you just stop and say, "Hey, that money's cycling back to the U.S. because we're making the I don't know. It just doesn't, because hey, we're making the weapons that are going over there and blowing up the
Russian Air Force. Yes,
10,000 children in Gaza.
Well, okay. I was thinking Ukraine, but the Israeli weapons come from us too, and. And, you know, it's really interesting to see, like, I flew back home, and the number of billboards I've seen that talked about Israel needing to, you know, change their military policy. Yeah, we've talked about this on the show a lot, and point the finger at the U.S., we definitely have our
yeah, there's reason. Blood on our hands for sure.
But having said that doesn't mean you have to ignore.
Right, like you don't ignore.
And we got a lot of positive feedback for our aggressive take on that. Not that it should be that.
You know, so I read this really fucked up story that the Israelis have drones that emit an audible sound that sounds like a woman crying or a baby crying. And so it's a drone. And then people come out to see what the sound is, and they're shot and killed. And now they've kind of figured it out. So if they hear a woman or a child screaming or crying out, now they just don't go out and they don't check.
Which is awful in a different direction.
But, I mean, right? Like, that's...
right?
And I say that, but that's technology that we we probably paid for.
It,
you know?
You know,
I mean, I just, that's...
For the majority of my life, I've been a pro-Israel guy because I always took the stance of they're the only democracy in the region, they're being attacked.
It's the right stance to take.
At the same time.
I mean, it's the right stance to take, but the issue is that I just, you know, I got into an argument with a buddy of mine who's a veteran who fought in the Middle East in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, I brought that up to him. And he had a very visceral reaction, but not to that. It was more of a good, kill them all sort of deal. You know, push them all in the ocean. And I'm like, dude, that's pretty fucked up. And his arguments are, one, you have no idea the horrible shit that we did in Iraq and Afghanistan. So criticizing what Israel is doing is pot meat kettle, which is the point that you were making earlier.
Not happily, but correct.
And then his other point was, look, and I'm not supporting this, but it's just, this is his lived experience. He said, you guys are so worried about the women and children. You have no idea how many women and children ran at us with AK-47s and bombs strapped to their chest and, you know, blew up our vehicles and did this and did that. You know, and he's just like, it's easy to tell when you're, you know, however many thousands of miles away and it's being reported through the eyes of CNN or, you know, whoever. But it's a whole different experience when every house you walk into, there's literally someone in that house who is trying to kill you. You know, and his beef is with Hamas, and he lumps all of Palestine to Hamas because it's just that he believes that Hamas has infected literally every man, woman, and child there. Like, the children are born into this concept that, like, you know, everyone else is evil. And he, you know, there are other points. Now, look. Again, I'm not supporting this. I'm not backing it up. But that's the mindset of people who, you know, we look to, right? When we look at defending our country, and then because then the other point too that was made is like, look, we lost, you know, 3,000 people in 9/11, right? And then we fucking flat out demolished Iraq, right?
Which had nothing to do with it.
Yes. Right? How many thousands of people that we killed over there?
Hundreds, you know, of thousands.
Right. Like, I mean, it's just like, okay. You know, I mean, and so it's, that being said, I still believe that Israel is going too far. Right? Like, I heard what he was saying. I felt what he was saying. And he's one of my dearest friends. But nonetheless, like, I still am on the side of restraint, right? Like, you've made your point to this point. You've killed so many people. Like, what's left, right? Because if you keep going at the, like, you're literally going to exterminate an entire group of people. And how is, like, given who you are in your experience and why you are as protective of Israel as you are, like, there's no pause there.
Why there are monuments to the awful things that happened, right, to your, like, so relatives.
What they're saying is, like, look, that's never going to happen. Like, when we say never again, we mean to us, right? But if we got to wipe out all of y'all to make sure it doesn't happen to us, we will. And I feel like that's kind of where we are with that, right? You know, and it just, I don't know.
You know, here's, we're both kind of rambling a bit, but here's one of the things that I hate to say.
Ramble these nuts is what you can do.
Okay, that helped a lot, by the way. There's no happy solution to this. There's no, you know, if Israel just tries to wipe out anyone who's ever going to be against them, ain't going to happen. If, you know, expect people who've, if you've been treated the way the Palestinians have over the course of history, it's easy to understand how to get radicalized. I mean, I'm not defending, I'm just saying that, like, if you are that bullied isn't even the right word. If your society oppressed right. is a better word, yes.
But even here, the other part of it, though, is that Palestinians don't have a great like history, you know, in other places, right? Like they've got there's a lot of bad blood between them and the Egyptians and them and the Saudis and like the
no one's been pro Palestine until Israel was against them, and then it was more anti-Israel.
Yes, exactly. So it's there's a lot of nuance, and it's a complex thing. I'm not nearly enough qualified to really to speak on it, you know, beyond a surface level. But I mean, I think what you said is something that I've expressed for a long time, is that there is no happy ending. There is no peaceful ending for this. Even if the fighting were to just flat out stop right now, there's no way that you could.
You're building generations of people with hate.
Right. Like, and I mean, if the fighting stops right now, you have just probably at least a couple decades of not only physical and infrastructure repair that you need to do, but also just emotional repair of what's been going on the last however many months since October. So, and it's not going to stop right now, and there's not going to be a quick fix to this. It's only going to go on longer. How long, I don't know, but it seems like every day that it does go on, you're tacking on that much more time to heal and figure out sort of peaceful way to move forward.
Yeah, and again, I hate to say it, but I know that if a wrong was done to a community that I was dedicated to, I'm not going to let it go. And, you know, 5 years pass, 10 years pass, whatever, I'm still going to hold that grudge. And I'm not a particularly spiteful person. You didn't start laughing. Okay. I don't, okay, maybe I have my moments. But in any event, you know, when you do that to a community, you're just, it's going to foment hate and the desire for retribution. And I don't see how it goes away. And it's a negative, ugly thing to say, and I know that, and I wish I didn't think it, but I also can't not. All right, let's talk some football and get the fuck out of here. I gotta fly back to freaking Baltimore.
Okay.
NFL draft starts Thursday night. Caleb Williams, quarterback out of USC, is pretty much the consensus number one overall pick to Chicago. Is there even debate?
I don't think so. I think that one's pretty much a done deal. We'll see.
You watch way more football than me. What do you think of him as a franchise quarterback?
I mean, I think he's probably going to be pretty good. I'm not particularly as in love with him as many others are, mostly because he's not great in the pocket. And I feel like there's going to be a pretty decent learning curve there for him. And he'll probably eventually get there, because he's plenty talented enough, especially out on the edge. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get away with some of the stuff that, you know, in the NFL that he's able to get away with at USC. Now, that being said, I think there were plenty of people who had the same criticisms of one Pat Mahomes, and that seems to have turned out just fine. Now, I also think that Patrick Mahomes did have those flaws that people talked about, but he was very fortunate that he goes to Kansas City with an Andy Reid behind an Alex Smith and has a year to work on some of that stuff, all of it really, before he had the responsibility of carrying a team.
Agreed. Does Caleb Williams have Pat Mahomes' level of arm talent? I hate that expression, arm talent, but I'm using it now.
I don't know why you hate it, but
I do.
Yes, he does.
He does. Okay, so yeah, he's got the rocket arm.
Yeah, he's got a rocket arm that is insanely accurate while on the run and throwing from positions that most people can't.
That's Pat Mahomes. Okay.
You know, so
I don't know that I ever saw Caleb Williams' game. Yeah. I watched, you know, highlight clips, and when, you know, highlights, you can make anyone look amazing or awful.
I watched him against Utah. I watched him a game they lost. I watched him against Colorado this year. Who else? UCLA.
You know what? I'd like to see them against Colorado. Was it a close game that USC ran away with late?
I think it was just a close game.
Okay. All right. I'm distracted. Sorry.
But anyway, and then I watched him play a couple times last year as well. But look, the kid is good. Like I said, I'm not as in love with him as others are. And I think really the draft probably actually starts after he gets picked, right? Because then, you know, the questions are, who's the consensus number two, right?
Is it Washington at number two? I think it is.
It's the Commanders with that pick. So, you know, are they going to go with Daniels out of LSU, or are they going to go with
Drake May?
Michael Penix Jr. on the table. You know, J.J. McCarthy is shooting up. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there. Looking at it, Daniels is probably the one that you take. Really athletic and, you know, was good with the ball at LSU. He was at Arizona State before that.
Also had stud receivers.
He did.
Which is not, you know, holding against him, but... No. It's, you know,
it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out, right? Because the Drake May, he's a guy that I think he regressed some this year. And when you look at it, like, his bad was real bad, right? But his good was really good. He's a guy that I people want to compare to Josh Allen, and I don't know if he's really got Josh Allen talent. He feels very Blake Bortles-ish to me.
I was going to say more Mitch Trubisky than Josh Allen.
No, Mitch, they're both different. UNC. Yeah, I mean they're both from North Carolina, but different body types.
Okay.
You know, I mean,
I've not watched Drake May play a game.
Yeah, I watch a lot of college football.
I'm more
obviously so. I've seen him play. Like I said, he just, especially with quarterbacks, if, like, typically you want to see the guy, you know, ascending, right? Sure. You think of Joe Burrow, right? Like, he, you know, didn't play at Ohio State, had an okay year at LSU, and then, boom, had an amazing year at LSU, and then ends up getting, goes number one overall, right? You don't really want the guy who had a really good year and then followed it up with not a great, you know.
Sure.
And you could argue that maybe if he was at LSU and had the talent around him that Daniels had, would he have played better? Would he have progressed? I don't know. There was definitely a lack of talent at North Carolina, but I don't know if the drop off was so big as you look at the way he kind of stepped backwards. That leaves a lot of question marks in my head. And the guy I feel kind of best about. There's two, really, is Michael Penix Jr. and J.J. McCarthy, right? Like, a lot of people hold Penix Jr.'s injuries against him. But those injuries were 2 years ago. He's
older. Washington?
Yeah, he was out of Washington. He had started his career at Indiana. And last 2 years was at Washington. Played really well. Played all the games the last couple years. Stayed healthy. His injuries were early. And he's still young. Like, people are like, oh, he's 25. Like, okay, yeah, he's a 25-year-old human, right? Like,
right.
They're young, they heal, they bounce back. He hasn't been injured in 2 years.
Tom Brady played who was 42, folks.
Right, exactly. Like, these quarterbacks were playing for, 20 years. So, and Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger, they started their careers in the early 2000s. And I think there was a huge medical and technology leap from when those guys started 100%. To like towards the middle end of their careers that extended their careers.
Sure.
And so that's only going to keep up. So my point is with a guy like a Michael Penix Jr., I'm not going to look at those injuries the same as such a determining factor because you've got time from when they occurred to where we are now. And you look at his overall production. You look at his accuracy. You look at his ability to throw all the balls. He didn't play a great national championship game. That's that's a fact. You can't really hide from it. He made some good throws in that game, but he also made a lot of bad throws, a lot of inaccurate throws. But that doesn't kind of erase his, you know, frame of, or his book of work.
Body of work, yeah.
His body of work up until that point. And, you know, he's a really productive kid. I mean, just has a great arm motion, right? The ball just, it's really efficient. There's not a lot of waste in it. And it just, the ball just jumps off his hand and gets to its target the way he wants it to. So, but J.J. McCarthy, everyone's beef against him is that he didn't throw the ball that much. It's like, you know, he didn't really need to, right? I like him because you've got a guy who played in a pro-style system, who won a lot of games, who did throw the ball enough to show you that he's, one, a better athlete with his feet than people give him credit for, and two, can make all the throws, right? So I guess I don't know if I want to penalize him because he didn't have to carry his team. I don't know if I penalize him for that because if he, like, and here's my other thing too. We know he's good at what you would want. You bring a young quarterback in, right? You're going to want to protect him. You should want to protect him by running the ball, using play action, playing good defense, right? Limiting his throws, limiting what he has to see, and trying to create opportunities mid and downfield, you know, through other mechanisms like play action, so that he can get some easy throws and get some easy wins, right? Like, so if I've got a guy who's already good at that, right, then I could plug him in and do that, but I could probably transition into some more complex concepts sooner, right, because he's already ahead of where some of these other guys are. So I think that people are starting to put that together for J.J. McCarthy, which is why he's climbing up the board.
Well, I mean, you're obviously, you just made your case. You're the most positive J.J. McCarthy person I've talked to about this. Now, I don't watch nearly as much college football as you. I'll acknowledge that. I also do not like the University of Michigan. I'll acknowledge that. You know, like I said a minute ago, that you can, if you watch highlight reels and you pick out, you know, 15 plays of J.J. McCarthy, he looks like a stud. He's on the run. Like you said, he's athletic. He's got a good arm, and he throws through a few just lasers. So if
you... Here's the problem, though, with that argument.
I'm not even making... Okay, go ahead.
Well, the problem is that if you say, all right, get rid of the highlight reels...
No.
But if you say, get rid of the highlight reels... And let's do a cut up of his bad tape. There's really not much.
Okay.
You know,
I'm not, that doesn't mean
that he doesn't have flaws, but there's like, he just doesn't have a lot of bad film. And it, so most of what you're seeing when you see like that, that's his tape. It's mostly good because they didn't need to throw a lot because they had this ridiculous offensive line. They could run
great
the ball.
Defense.
You know, they had,
I mean,
you know,
ridiculous defense.
You know, Corum and the running backs were really, really good and effective, and they had that shutdown defense. He didn't have to do a lot, but what he did well.
And he did it consistently. National championship, I mean, I can't deny the obvious.
I think the kid's record is like 15-3 or 15-2 or something ridiculous, like
and like yeah, that. I'm not. Nothing you said is refutable. I mean, he did those things, and those things happened.
Some of this is you don't like Michigan.
Right? That plays a role, but I'm not that.
No, I'm just
biased.
Saying.
I mean, sure. Yeah, no, I am sure. All right, let's move on to other positions because I want to talk about wide receivers. Is okay. Marvin Harrison Jr. really that much better than everyone else?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Yeah,
the kid from Washington, I forget. Odunze, yes. Stud. Mm. And there's so many interesting guys at receiver. As a Bills fan, with Stephon Diggs leaving, that's obviously on my mind. And Gabe Davis. You know, that's on my mind. The Steelers are in the market for a receiver too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yep. So, and you're picking at 20?
Yeah, we're picking at 20. If the Steelers draft a receiver at 20, I would lose my shit. I don't think that they would. We haven't taken a receiver in the first round since, maybe Santonio Holmes or Plaxico Burress. So I can't imagine that they would flip that now, given the holes that we have. Our two big holes on offense are the offensive line. We released Mason Cole, who was not great at center last year, skipped a lot of balls back, also just got completely manhandled. And we need another tackle. Dan Moore Jr. is just not quite turning out the way you would want him to. We got Broderick Jones last year. We played Broderick on the right, and we played Dan Moore on the left. And, you know, I think Broderick is a natural left tackle. He did pretty good on the right, but I think he would do even better where he naturally is supposed to be, which means that you either put Dan Moore on the right side, which I think he adamantly doesn't want to do, so then that means you have to bring in a right tackle. So I think the Steelers draft center tackle in the first and second round, which isn't sexy at all, but, like, look, you get a first-round tackle last year. You get another first-round center tackle this year, a second-round center tackle this year in a draft that's deep in both center and tackle. You are now looking at an offensive line that can be very good for years to come. And when your offensive line is good and you can run block and you can pass block well, that means that you can run the ball, you can use play action. It makes your quarterbacks better. It makes your receivers better because your quarterback has more time to let those guys get open. Also, it makes your running backs better because, well, they're making bigger holes and the running backs are getting bigger runs. I can justify taking a receiver in the third round after I solidify my offensive line because especially with the Steelers who have had success taking late round wide receivers, right? So if you're good at developing young wide receivers and this is a wide receiver rich draft, right? And you've got two glaring holes on your offensive line, you have not had a lot of success with mid to later round offensive linemen. It seems to me that the move is go get two top tier talents on your O-line, get your wide receiver third. Maybe you get a cornerback, you need help on the D-line, then you get your inside linebacker, and then boom, you're done.
I want the Bills to go after a receiver at 28 or trade back and get more draft capital, but still draft a receiver first with their first
draft
pick.
Draft capital to draft what?
So the receiver I want is not a first-round grade by most people. Is Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. I just love that guy's game. He's a big, strong, physical kid who might not be the most polished receiver, but when you got Josh Allen as a quarterback...
Alshon Jeffrey.
Okay. That's not an insult.
No, that's not bad. He just reminds me of Alshon Jeffrey, and they just so happen to have gone to the same school, right?
Okay.
But Alshon Jeffrey was a big guy. He was not the greatest route runner of all time, but he caught the ball consistently.
He caught the ball, you had a monster to try to bring down.
Like you had to bring, and he used his body, and was kind of what pushed him out of the league because he punished guys. And Leggett is very similar. I think that would be a good get. The only thing, what was Leggett's speed?
It was fast. I think it was like a 4.39 or 4.41 or something. Okay. For a guy his size, he blazes.
Okay. So I get
way too into 40 times. We've talked about this on and off the air, but I want a guy who can just be a threat to put on the outside. I mean, the Bills made Robert Foster a legitimate threat, and the fact that no one listening knows that name, and you might not even know that name.
I know.
Okay. We made him a legit receiver with Josh Allen's arm. So give me Xavier Leggett.
Robert Foster was just really fast.
He was really fast in a straight line, right. And that's it. And he lasted in the league for like 4 years because he was that. Leggett's better.
If he could have just figured out how to run a route, he probably would have had a longer career.
All right, moving on. Anyway.
Hey, how about you learn to go right?
All right, we gotta either wrap this shit up or choose another topic.
No, we're good.
All right, we're good. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. It's been fun. I'll be back from Baltimore soon, and I'm glad. And we're out.